Welcome to Business Beat. Here each week, KBIA takes a look at the business and economic issues facing mid-Missouri. I'm Christopher Husted. Crop insurance is a big part of the Farm Bill debate in Washington this year. The Senate recently passed a bill that would expand the heavily subsidized program. And now the House is zeroing in on the issue. Several amendments to the Farm Bill pending in the House would curb how much the government provides to cut the cost farmers pay for crop insurance. But premiums aren't the only part of the system supported by taxpayers. Harvest Public Media's Frank Morris reports.
Most of the taxpayer money to keep farmers in business when the weather and markets turn against them now flows through federally subsidized crop insurance.
Congress wanted this to happen, and it has now happened.
Keith Collins had the job of chief economist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture longer than anyone ever has. He served 16 years under four presidents and watched as most farm support programs were rolled into crop insurance.
You had one member of Congress after another saying that we have to find a better way to manage disasters than sort of the after-the-fact approach that had been taken with having to pass emergency supplemental unbudgeted bills.
So last year, when the worst drought in generations struck the Corn Belt, there was no need for an emergency disaster program. That's because unlike in previous droughts or floods, most farmers now carry plenty of crop insurance. The problem is that as crop insurance has become more popular with farmers, it's also grown much more expensive. Last year's drought pushed the total bill for taxpayers over $13.5 billion. This at a time when grain farmers are enjoying near record incomes, and the federal government is skimping on everything from national parks to nutritional programs for the poor. The backlash was inevitable.
And the crop insurance program, you really just got to say it's under attack in Washington, D.C.
Tom Sell, a lobbyist working to protect crop insurance, says senators weighed lots of ways to curb the cost of the program. In the end, they trimmed premium subsidies for farmers making more than $750,000. And tied crop insurance eligibility to environmental regulations that have long been requirements for participating in other types of farm programs. Sell says crop insurance works great the way it is. He says it provides farmers with enough security to invest in land and equipment to manage their business aggressively without betting the farm to do it. But Bruce Babcock at Iowa State says the system is out of whack because taxpayers pick up most of the cost of farmers' business security.
Where is it written that the taxpayers need to take all the risk out of farming to allow farmers to take more risks?
Taxpayers support crop insurance in three basic ways. First off, the government picks up more than 60% of the premiums farmers pay to crop insurance companies. That's about $7 billion a year right there. Taxpayers also pony up for virtually all the insurance companies' operating expenses. That bill was $1.3 billion last year. So the 15 companies involved sell a product at a steep discount, which is covered by the government, and then get their operating expenses taken care of. And there's more. The federal government also steps in to bail out crop insurance companies when widespread disaster strikes, and insurance indemnities total more than premiums. Supporters say all of this is a benefit to farmers, because if the companies weren't getting the subsidies, they would charge much more, and farmers couldn't afford insurance. But Babcock says it amounts to a pretty sweet deal for crop insurance companies, too.
Even in disastrous years, the companies, how much loss they have to absorb is dramatically limited by the taxpayers. In good years, they get a bunch of money.
For last year's drought, the government stepped in to cover about $4.7 billion worth of crop insurance company losses. The drought cost crop insurance companies, too. They're out about $1.33 billion. But it's only the second year this century they've actually lost money. The industry's long run of subsidized profitability drew scrutiny. The Obama administration has capped the money it pays for operating expenses and the commissions that agents can charge. Those cuts haven't caused a single company to walk away from the business. Still, Keith Collins says they have been enough to move the policy debate to premium subsidies for farmers.
Reflecting some of the cuts that have already taken place, reflecting the big losses that occurred in 2012.
Collins says pending amendments in the House would either cut premium subsidies across the board, cap subsidies to individual farmers, or impose income limits on them, as was done in the Senate. Art Barnaby at Kansas State University says a small cut to crop insurance premiums would be fine, but he insists that crop insurance has to be subsidized to some degree in order to work as the principal farm safety net. Drop the subsidy and the price might triple. Many farmers would drop coverage. Some would pay to keep it, and
that would all work unless the first time there's a disaster, the government comes along with an ad hoc disaster program. And then you just kill the incentive to pay those substantially higher premiums for insurance coverage.
Because since the disastrous 1930s, the federal government has maintained a farm safety net. And it's that expectation that necessitates crop insurance subsidies now.
You can't sell unsubsidized insurance into a market that expects a government bailout if something bad happens.
So there's little doubt that crop insurance will emerge from the current Farm Bill process with hefty subsidies in place. If anything, an even more important part of the farm safety net. The debate is over the details of those subsidies and who winds up getting them. Frank Morris, Harvest Public Media.
A small independent movie theater serving rural Missouri has decided to do something special for children with autism and other disabilities. In West Plains, Jennifer Davidson reports.
4-year-old Jack Sander is picking up puzzle pieces in his living room. For a 4-year-old, he's got it pretty good. But there's one thing he's never been able to do. Dawn Sander is Jack's mother.
Jack has never been able to even try to go to the movies before. He's so sensory-seeking, he can't sit still now, that there's no way he can go to an hour-and-a-half movie where the lights are off and sit still and don't talk.
Jack has developmental delay, issues with his vision, and severe speech delay. He also has sensory processing disorder. When the animated film Winnie the Pooh came to the local theater, Jack's friends all went to see it. Dawn considered going, but knew it was too much of a gamble. That's why she was moved to tears when she went to the Facebook page of the local theater, the Glass Sword Cinema, and learned that it's offering a sensory-friendly movie just for kids like Jack.
We leave the lights on in the theater.
Clint Corman is the technical manager at the theater.
We turn the sound down. The audience is free to, you know, express themselves however they want. They can sing along, they can clap, they can dance.
So, the Glass Sword Cinema, which has 6 screens, is preparing to open its doors at a special time and load the animated film Monsters University in all of its theaters.
What are we going to see at the movies?
Monsters.
Dawn Sanders says she and other parents of children with disabilities just crave normalcy. She and her son Jack are planning to get a taste of that normalcy when they go on their first mommy-son date to the movies. She says there's no guarantee Jack will even make it through this movie, but at least he's now able to try. For KSMU News, I'm Jennifer Davidson.
That's it for Business Beat this week. I'm Christopher Husted. Thanks for listening.